Parshas Vayeshev, Tafshin Pei. So it's a jam-packed Parsha again, and this Parsha really is almost like a movie scenes unfolding. You can make a story, a movie, out of these stories, and even the next several Parshas. I'm surprised there hasn't been one yet. You know, there's one about Yetzias Mitzrayim, there have been, but this story is, I think, would really become a very popular movie, because it really is just jam-packed with excitement and ups and downs, surprises, highs and lows, and we'll discuss some of that tonight. But just to give an overview of the Parsha, and before we do that, tonight's year is going to be a Lizchus Refua Shlema for Betzalel Tzvi Ben Chai Yocheved and Le'ilei Nishmas Shoshana Malka Bas Ben Yamin Yaakov Alei Shalom and Le'ilei Nishmas Eliezer Lieber Ben David Zichrono Levracha, who were both Nifteris and Nifter this week. Neshama should have an Aliyah. And Betzalel Tzvi Ben Chai Yocheved is a young man around my age who was just discovered a brain tumor and had to have emergency surgery this week. Has three young kids and is recovering right now in the hospital, and they don't know the future and what's going to be. So should just have a refuah shleimah b'karov. So a summary of the parsha we'll start with. So we know Yaakov and his family final settle in Canaan, beginning of the parsha. And Yaakov loved Yosef more than all his other sons, the Torah tells us. He made him a ketonis pasim. And the brothers were jealous, and perhaps rightfully so. If there's 12 children and daddy's choosing one, so they were jealous of that favoritism, and they avoided talking to him. And Yosef would go ahead, and he would relay the dibasam ra'al aviyem. And then we know the two dreams Yosef has in the beginning of the parsha, which he shares with his brothers, and that does not help their situation, and it just kind of increases the jealousy and the anger and the hatred that's there. And later on, a little while later, the brothers are near Shechem dealing with their father's sheep, and Yosef is sent by Yaakov Avinu himself to go to find his brothers and see how they're doing. And when the brothers saw that Yosef was coming, they came up with a plot. They said, "We're going to go ahead and we're going to kill him." Reuven said not to. Reuven stood up. He said, "No, let's not kill him. Instead, let's throw him into the boar, into the pit." And Reuven really had good intentions. Chazal later said he wanted to really save him. He wanted to rescue Yosef from the pit and save him. That was Reuven's plan, as the Bechor. We know what happens. Yosef gets there. They basically strip him down, take the ketonis pasim off him, and they throw him into the boar. And Yosef's then sold. It's not clear exactly who sold him, which is fascinating. Everybody thinks the brothers did, but maybe we'll have time if we could see the psukim inside. So there's a Rashbam out there that discusses that it's not beferish that the brothers actually sold him down to Mitzrayim. Others might have sold him. But somehow he ends up in Mitzrayim either way. And he's then sold to Potiphar as a slave, who's Pyro's chief butcher. And in the meantime, the brothers take Yosef's ketonis pasim, they dip it into the blood, and show it to Yaakov, who assumes that Yosef was killed by a beast. And he mourned for the next 22 years. But as we know, Chazal say he didn't stop mourning because he knew really he was alive, because you can't stop mourning if someone's alive. You can only stop mourning once somebody is nifter and leaves the world. So the story of Yosef then is oddly interrupted, and we go on a big tangent, talk about Yehuda and Tamar. The Torah tells us entire maisa of Yehuda and Tamar and Yehuda's children and Er and Onan and and his third son also to Tamar, and what happened. Er dies and Onan dies, then Yehuda goes ahead and sleeps with Tamar, and she ends up having Zerach and Peretz, and the whole Maisa there. Tonight, I don't think we're going to have much time to speak about this. Hopefully we will in future years, but it's a whole random, kind of totally out of place story that's there, and it's very interesting to try to think about why is it placed there, because its placement seems very odd. And then back later on in the Parsha, the Torah continues with the story of Yosef, that he's in the house of Potiphar, and he was becoming very successful in all of his endeavors. Potiphar notices this and goes ahead and says, "You're in charge of my household, my estate. You seem to be doing very well. You'll do a great job handling everything, running the show here." And he was Yosef was very good looking, and Potiphar's wife tried to seduce Yosef to sleep with her. And Yosef, with his incredible strength of control over his Yetzer Hara and over his temptations and desires, he really overcame that challenge, And the Gemara even says he's Mechayiv Rishayim because of that. He's used as the example to be Mechayiv Rishayim and to get a Shemayim and think about how that big of a challenge it was for Yosef, throw down into the pit, sold down to Mitzrayim, he's a slave, he comes, finally goes up to the top, and then Ashes Potiphar is there, finally, he hasn't seen a woman, been with a woman in whom knows how long, and all of a sudden, she's right there and asking him to sleep with her, and Yosef is able to be Miskaber. But Ashes Potiphar makes his life miserable. Because of that, she claims that he went ahead and, that she lies and says that he was making advances on her and everything, and Potiphar threw Yosef into jail. And Hashem, though, in jail, was still with Yosef, the Torah tells us, and he was in charge of the prisoners there. And we know there he meets the Sar Oifim, the Sar Mashkim, the butler and the baker, and they had dreams, and Yosef interprets their dreams, and he tells the butler that he's going to be released soon back to Paro's, to work for Paro. But the baker was told that he's going to be hung, and we know that those dreams come true. And 3 days later, the butler, though, forgot all about Yosef and to tell Paro all about that. So that's how the parsha ends, and we know it's like a kind of like a cliffhanger, like what happens next, and we'll have to talk about that next week. But to start with this week's parsha, so if you just one ha'ara by Rabbi Isaac Bernstein Zatzal in source number one, he says that it's incredible. There's a lot of dreams going on in these parshas, a lot of aliyos and yeridos, ups and downs, highs and lows, especially for Yosef in his life. And he says beautifully, he says, there's an unusual symmetry in the Parshios, and you could say this on Miketz or Vayeshev, but between Miketz and Vayeshev, both of which deal most exclusively with the rise and fall in Vayeshev, meaning Yosef's at the top in the beginning of Vayeshev. He's the choicest of the sons. He's loved by his father. He's given a Ketonas Pasim. He's mamish, like he's in the highest place in the world. Yaakov Avinu loves him. Yaakov Avinu is the leader of everyone at the time. But then we know he's mamash thrown in a pit, sold down to Mitzrayim, and he ends up in jail at the end of the parsha. And Miketz, though, he starts in jail, and he ends up getting out of jail and becoming Mishnah L'Melech, becoming second to Pyro in command. So Rav Isaac Bernstein suggests that there's a method behind this symmetry between the high and the low in Vayeshev and the low and the high that goes on in Miketz. And what is it? That Yosef is doomed to begin his descent because his dreams in the beginning of Vayeshev are all self-absorbed. It's all about himself. His sole interest was lied in communicating his own dreams of himself to others. They were about him, people bowing down to him. But by the beginning of Miketz, what happens? Really, the end of Vayeshev, Yosef is now listening to the dreams of others. He's not fully consumed with himself and telling everybody the dreams that happened to him and about him and glorifying himself. Instead, he's helping others. He's giving advice to others. He's listening. He's hearing what others have to say and addressing it. And that's really what is how one becomes a gadol, how one becomes a leader, how Yosef then ascends to these great heights, is not by focusing on myself, but by focusing on others. And he suggests that's as an opening idea, that's really one of the messages we can learn from Yosef HaTzadik, not to be introverted and selfish and focused on myself, but what can I do to help others? What can I do, even just listening to the dreams? And then he gave an interpretation of being a listener sometimes, being there for someone else, just letting them talk is a maila in and of itself. And that's what Yosef, one of the midos that allowed him to rise to greatness. So if we look in source number two, for opening pasuk, Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Megviyar Aviv Beretz Kanan. So Yaakov finally goes ahead, he settles in the land of his father's travels in Eretz Kanan, where his father lived in Eretz Kanan. So we know Rashi famously says, Od Nidrash Bo Vayeshev Bikesh Yaakov Leshev Bashava. Yaakov Avinu just wanted to sit in some tranquility. He wanted to have some peace and quiet. His whole life, he's been dealing with a lot of tzaras. Most of his life, a lot of his life, I should say his whole life. Because there were years where he didn't deal with tzaras. But growing up, he always had Esav. Esav was there and Esav wanted to kill him. He had to write a way to Lavan. He was tricked by Lavan. He had to work for him. Double, triple, he's tricked again with the sheep in the fields, and it was always constantly something going on. And then Rachel dies, and there's just always something happening in Yaakov Avinu's life that he's just constantly dealing with tzaros, one trouble, one tragedy after the next. So Yaakov, at the end of his life, he wants to finally, I had my 12 children, I accomplished my tafkid, he just wants some peace and quiet, I just want to learn Torah, I just want to sit. Ribbono Shalom says, you think you're done? Yeah, we're not done. Now could be the biggest nisayon of your entire life. Your children are going to turn on each other. Kafatz alav rugza shal Yosef. So the entire ordeal of Yosef, it jumps upon him. Tzadikim, says Rashi, quoting from Chazal, Mevakshim Leishi B'Shalva, Tzadikim want to go ahead, they request to sit in peace and tranquility. Like a rhetorical question, Rebbe Baruch Shalom says, is it not enough that the tzaddikim who do so many mitzvahs are going to get schar and relax and enjoy Olam Haba, that they also need to go ahead and have that tranquility and peace in Olam Hazeh? It's a very funny Rashi. It's a very strange Rashi. I mean, it's a very strange concept. What's the big deal? Give him a break. Give Yaakov Avinu a break. We all need that in life, right? We just want, sometimes in life, we just want it to go our way. We just want things to work out well. We have this tire and that headache and this problem and that problem. And then we just need to catch a break. Let Yaakov catch a break. Let him go ahead and have some shalva. What's the big deal? So we'll give a couple of different answers to what was wrong. What was the problem with Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva? Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu go ahead and see fit for Yaakov Avinu to be sitting in peace and quiet during these last years of his life? So in Source 4, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Darsh Moshe, he quotes Rashi. And he says, he implies the question. He says, Nira Devadai rotza Hashem Yisbarach b'shalvas tzadikim shehena lahen v'hana la'olam. Shehana lahen v'hana la'olam. Of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the tzadikim to have hana for them and the hana for the world, because if they're in peace, then the whole world's at peace because they're doing what they're supposed to. And as the Gemara says, Umi sani l'tzadikim da'achli trei alma. Is it so bad? It's a Gemara in Harios Daf Yoram Beis. Rava says, "Atu tzadik at tzadiki yachle trealme misane lehu." Is it so bad that the tzadikim should go ahead and not have both worlds? Why shouldn't they enjoy this world and the next world? They're tzadikim. So he says, "What? That's Rava." There's a whole that's the middle of a dialogue there, but that's Rava. That's what Rava says. And he interprets the Gemara there in a different way because he thinks that tzadikim should be able to enjoy Olam Hazeh. There's nothing wrong with it. So Rav Moshe is asking the same question. So he says as follows. Aval hakavana, the kavana is leinyan hachinuch v'tilmod ha'avonim. The kavana is about chinuch and teaching children. She Yaakov chashav sheino tzarech shub lidog avor chinuch banav sheim kulam b'chirei Hashem etzadikei olam. Yaakov Avinu felt that I don't need to worry anymore about educating my children and teaching them, because what the b'chirei Hashem, the tzaddikim of the world, they're the chosen ones, they're the shvatim. She Hakadosh Baruch Mishtabech b'hem. Hashem is pleased with them. Hashem praises them. He's very happy with them. The kavtza love rogz osha Yosef. No, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the whole ordeal of Yosef comes. Why? Shemizecha zinan shelo olam at bevanim hayoser gedolim ba'olam vayoser tzaddikim tzarech ha'av shelo lasiach daito mehem ulaochicham ularosam eich lesnai. Because the Torah is teaching us, Yaakov Avinu, you can't just step away. You can't just step aside. You can't not be involved with your children just because they're the shvatim and they're the shifteka and the bechire of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You, even at your elderly age, still need to be involved in the chinuch of your children. They're not perfect. A father can't just abandon his children and say, you know what, I'm done. I don't want to go ahead. I don't need to. Not I don't want to. I don't need to. My children are good. They don't need me anymore. Hashem is teaching us a fundamental lesson in chinuch. What is it? That the responsibility, the obligation of chinuch never ends. You could have a parent who thinks, okay, my kid's 18, right? In America, you're good. Then your kid's responsible for himself. You don't have to pay his bills or whatever it is. I don't know exactly the laws, but everyone says, okay, once you're 18, you can do it, whatever you want to do. The Torah is a different perspective. The Torah says, no, a parent has an obligation even when they're 100. Even when they're in our world, let's say 70, and their child is 45, there's still a mitzvah of chinuch upon the parent. It never goes away. Yaakov Avinu wanted, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. My children are great. They're tzaddikei olam. I don't need to do anything anymore with them. Rebbe Baruch Shalom is teaching them, no, you can't just focus on yourself and go ahead into your own world now and just have peace and quiet. That's not how it works. Chinuch is a lifelong mission. It starts with starts at the beginning when the child is a baby, but it never ends, and teaches us the amazing and awesome responsibility it is of being a parent. It's not just like, it's like such an incredibly large responsibility, probably the largest responsibility in the entire world. There's nothing greater than that. There's no greater obligation that a person has than to his own children, and to try his best to, and her best as a mother, to take care of their children. So that's Rav Moshe's pshat in Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. Rav Nissen Alper in the Midrash Nisan, in source number 5 and in source number 6, we'll have two different ideas from him, suggests differently. We'll say just for time outside at source number 5. He says that Yaakov Avinu wanted to make Yosef the fourth Av. Right? We know Shlosha Avos. We only have three. But Yaakov Avinu wanted to make Yosef the fourth Av, and that's why what he gave him the Ketanis Pasim. He gave him this colorful, beautiful coat that was going to be a simon, a sign of godless, a sign that he's next in line. It was Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef. That's what Yaakov Avinu wanted to do. Because he saw what happened. He saw Yitzchak Avinu, right? He didn't necessarily choose Yaakov over Esav in his lifetime. I don't want that to happen. I'm going to choose. I'm going to make it clear. I'm going to appoint my successor. And it's going to be who? It's going to be Yosef. So he didn't want there to be any kind of confusion, any friction with the brothers. He wanted to go ahead and make it very clear. So what happened? And Rav Nissen Alpert explains, he just says, like as an aside nekuda, that we know, he asks, what midah would Yosef be? Or what midah would Yosef have to be? He says, Yaakov was a midah of chesed, Yitzchak was a midah of gvura din, and Yaakov was emes. Next would have to be malchus. Because Ad Khan, he says, they didn't have a am. There was no Klal Yisrael. It was from father to son, and Masara. And now with the Shvatim, we're starting to create a nation. And when that happened, you need to go ahead. When Yaakov's name was changed from Yisrael, it was really that line of demarcation from changing from this individual Masara until now this community and this Klal Yisrael, really, or this beginning of the Klal Yisrael. So they needed to go ahead and to have this malchus, to have a leader, a shepherd, so to speak. So he says as follows, B'kesh Yaakov leshe b'shava, what's wrong with it? How does that make sense? He wanted to go ahead and pass down the Masara to Yosef. He wanted to teach Yosef everything. Let me teach everything to Yosef now, and I'm done. Pass down the Masara for the end of my life, because no one, Yitzchak Avinu didn't do that. Let me do it. And that's what it means. He wanted to step aside. Let me take a backseat role and teach Yosef everything he needs to be in charge. Kafatz alav roigzo shel Yosef. Meaning what? It's not going to happen. There's not going to be a fourth Av. It's not time. You have to continue to be the Av until the end of your life. So it wasn't the right time. Ribbono Shel Olam was telling him to go ahead and step aside. And number six, Limudei Nisan also, Nisan Outbreak, is a different beautiful idea. And he explains, he says that, we'll read it inside because I think it's a very powerful piece. He says that Yaakov Avinu was constantly worried throughout his life about Esav. And if you skip down, right, that milchama throughout his entire life, Rav Nissen Alpert says, was Hishkiya Kol Koch Esav. It took out all of his koyach, his whole life dealing with Esav until he was a very old age and being worried about Esav killing him. Mamish used up the koyach of Yaakov Avinu. He used so much strength in that, in the worries and about dealing with Esav emotionally, mentally, encountering him. It took a lot out of him. So he says as follows, if you skip to six lines up in the bottom, first word. Since his whole life revolved around Esav, he felt when I met Esav in the beginning of Vayishlach, my job's over, I'm done. I finished my job, and I could sit, and I could go ahead and just and take care of myself, enjoy, and go ahead and focus on that. Immediately, Yosef, the problems of Yosef arise. Why? To teach us that whenever there isn't shalom amongst Bnei Yisrael, there's a great danger that's going on. And you can't just step away. You can't just step aside from all that and say, okay, I'm going to remove myself. Ki me'agoyim hakamim al am Yisrael, Hashem yishmerenu miyadam. Because says Rav Nissen Alpert, I guess maybe he's saying it, we could see it historically even, that when the goyim attack us, when non-Jews want to hurt Jews and kill them, Hashem protects us. We need a daven. We need a bitachon and emunah, of course. But the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to protect us. And this is a huge yesod. They can't kick us out of our land, Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, it's ours. Aval mehatzar pnimi. But he says, from the inner turmoil, from the inner tzar, hakina vehasina, from the jealousy, from the hatred, vehapirud, and from the separation, and the lack of achdus that's there among Klal Yisrael, hasholit bein ha'ochim yigram es hagolus. That's there amongst Bnei Yisrael, that's what causes the galus. Says that the reason the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed and Yaakov Avinu was mesamel to this is because sinas chinam. A very powerful vart, a very powerful distinction. When it comes to the guy, when it comes to Esav, so Ribbono Shel Olam is going to protect us. Yaakov Avinu wanted to separate himself, but there was sinah amongst the children, right? The brothers were jealous of Yosef. The brothers weren't there was mamish sinah amongst Klal Yisrael themselves, amongst the Shvatim. And then that needs to be rectified. That needs to be worked on. That needs to go ahead and be something that you're involved with to try to fix, to try to create an avas chinam, to try to create a love between everyone and not the hatred and the jealousy, to try to remove that. That needs to be done from us. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't come and do that. We need to do that. And that's what Kofzal Olav Rugza Shel Yosef teaches us. Yaakov wanted to just remove himself. You can't just remove yourself once there's an inner turmoil amidst Klal Yisrael themselves. We as Klal Yisrael need to go ahead and work on it with each other. It's an amazing, amazing environment, amazing yisod in like how it works. The Ribbono Shel Olam will protect us from the non-Jews, but from amongst ourselves, Ribbono Shel Olam says, you guys got to work it out yourselves. Figure it out. Don't abandon. Don't jump ship. Figure out how to get along. Get rid of the hatred. Get rid of the differences. Focus on the similarities. Focus on the love between you. Focus on the fact that you're all Jews. You're all trying to serve me. We're all doing the mission of God in this world. And that's the lesson that we can learn from here. So three different ideas on what Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shava. What was wrong with that? What was the problem there? Why Kofts all the rogues of Shel Yosef? Why was it so bad for him to just want to have a break and sit in peace and quiet? So now, moving on to another idea, source number 7. So the Torah in Perek Lamed Zayin plus a Gimel tells us right in the beginning of Parsha as well, Yisrael havas Yosef mikolbanah kiven v'zikunim hulo v'asalok tzonas pasim. Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu loved Yosef because from all his children, he was a ben zikunim. We'll talk about that, what that means exactly, what is ben zikunim. Talk about that soon. But because he loved him, the Torah tells us he made him the special coat, the ketanis pasim. So it's a beautiful idea also from Rav Isaac Bernstein. And if you haven't heard this idea, it's fascinating. It's great. You can use it on Pesach. You can use it now. You can use it any time throughout the year. Torah is Torah. But if you look in Source 8, Rabbeinu Manoach says something very cryptic at first. So Rabbeinu Manoach on Hilchos Chamitza Matzah Perek Ches Halacha Beis. He's a parish on the Rambam. In his Sefer Amnucha, he writes as follows. In the underlined part, Va'anu Nohagim Karpas. We have a minhag to have Karpas on Pesach, on the Seder night. Zecher L'Ketonis Pasim. Why? To remind us of the Ketonis Pasim, She'asa Yaakov Avinu LiYosef, that Yaakov Avinu made for Yosef. Now, what in the world does Karpas, taking a vegetable, celery, potato, whatever you use, dipping it in salt water, and eating it at the Seder as the third simon of the Seder night, have to do with the Ketonis Pasim? At first glance, this has nothing to do with each other. But if you look at Rashi, Rashi actually explains in the word Pasim, Lashon Kli, Kli Milos, Kumo Karpas Utchelas. He says that it means a fine woolen garment. Like what? Karpas Utchelas. We find the word Karpas elsewhere in the Torah. Where? In Esther, in Megillas Esther, in source number 10, where it means certain kinds of different colors of wool. Like what? Like the Ketonis Pasim, a multicolored coat of all different colors that was beautifully woven in wool. So if you look in source number 10, Megillas Esther, Perek Aleph, in Pasuk Vav, when it's describing the sudos that Achashverosh had, it says, Chur Karpas Utchelas. There's the word Karpas right there. What does it mean? It says fine cotton. Karpas, it's some sort of fine cotton. And Tchelas is blue. It's talking about all these beautiful, lavish, wonderful sudos he had and how expensive they were. So, what's the pshat? What does this mean exactly? What's the connection? Karpas, Ketanis Pasim, really, Rashi defines pasim as karpas, as the same lashon. And what does that have to do with what's the relationship between the ketanis pasim and karpas? So we know, if you think about it, this story is the beginning of the Yerida to Mitzrayim. This story is how we ended up in Mitzrayim, the story of the brothers and Yosef. The ketanis pasim is the symbol, really, of that. Because that's what the brothers, what gave Yaakov gave to Yosef to show that he loved him. The brothers were jealous of that. The dreams increased that jealousy and the hatred. But the Ketonis Pasim was the first thing, really, that we learn, where the brothers went ahead and they hated. They were jealous of Yosef because of it was the first Simon of Kinnah. And what did they do with that ketonis pasim? They dipped it in blood. They dipped it in blood and brought it to Yaakov Avinu so that he can come to the conclusion that an animal ate Yosef. So how do we put it all together? Says Rabbeinu Manoach, he explains it himself. And we'll read it inside. But what Rav Isaac Bernstein explained, is that when we sit down the Seder night, before we get to Magid, before we get to talking about the beginning of the Shibud of Mitzrayim and then the Geula from Mitzrayim and go through the entire story of being in Egypt, we need to actually remind ourselves, how did we get there in the first place? How did we end up at Mitzrayim? And the answer is through Kina, through the jealousy from the brothers of Yosef with the Ketanis Pasim. And the Karpas represents that on the Seder night. The Karpas, which Ketanis Pasim, they mean the same thing, goes ahead and reminds us the dipping of the Karpas into the salt water. How did it all begin? It began with the Sinas Chinam, with the jealousy that was there. And after that, okay, we know what we need to rectify, we know what we need to work on, we can tell the story of Magid, we can tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But it's amazing, if you think about it, really, the next many parshios start this whole Yerida down to Mitzrayim with this Ketanis Pasim. And that's Rav Isaac Bernstein says, if you look in Rabbeinu Manoach, so he says, Asher b'sibasa niskagel hadavar v'yardu avasinu Mitzrayim, that it was because of the Ketanis Pasim, that was the reason that Avosena went down to Mitzrayim. He says that that's what it is. The Karpas is a zecher of the Ketanis Pasim, the dipping of the Karpas, the dipping of the Ketanis Pasim to remind us of the jealousy that was there, that's how it started, and that's what we need to work on. An amazing and fascinating connection that seems random at first, but really beautifully developed and connected when you understand what Rabbi Noam Noach is really talking about. Source number 11 is another beautiful idea we can learn. And I think it's very practical. So the Torah tells us in Pasuk Dal, the next Pasuk, Vayur echav ki osu ahav avihem mikol echav vayisnu osov lo yechlu dabar lo shalom. The brothers saw that Yaakov Avinu loved Yosef more than all of them, and they hated him. They weren't able to speak with him peacefully. Lo yechlu dabar lo shalom. They weren't able to talk to him, and they couldn't communicate together in a peaceful way. Says Tiferes Yohanesson Eibshitz, in his commentary, he says beautifully, lo yachlu darbalo shalom mean? What does it mean exactly? They weren't able to speak peacefully. Hu dechsiv lo sisna achicha bilvavecha, hocheach tochiach tamitech. Right? The Pasuk tells us, the mitzvah of tochacha, that a person needs to go ahead if he sees his friend doing something wrong and give him rebuke. If you see someone doing something wrong, you know they're going to be makabel your tochacha, your rebuke, if you tell them that they're doing something wrong and that they should stop doing that and fix it. There's a mitzvah to tell them that. V'hainu, k'sheyesh adam b'libo t'luno v'tairum asal chaveiro. So he explains as follows. It's a yesod in relationships. When a person has in his heart a complaint, something that's bothering him about his friend, right? He's annoyed at his friend. Nisraba hasina yom b'yomo. If I'm upset at my friend internally, and something's bothering me, it's on my mind, it's not going to just disappear magically. If it really is eating me alive, it's going to actually go ahead and build day after day after day. That anger, that feeling of being upset that I have against someone is going to compound. It's like compounding interest. You know, there's simple interest, there's compound interest, so it's going to go ahead, it's going to grow very, very quickly. But when a person goes ahead to his friend, he says, someone does something wrong to me. Somebody said something, said Lashon Hara about me, I heard. And I'm really annoyed. I'm really upset. I told them, it's bothering me. And I confront the person. And I speak it out with them. I say, look what you did to me. Look what you said about me. Why'd you say that? And it's not easy to do that. But if a person does that, and his friend goes ahead and he admits that he did it, or he goes ahead and he discusses, talks it out with him, then that sin is going to go away. It's not going to exist anymore. So when you talk something out, the Torah is telling us, says Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, it can mamish dissolve and diffuse the feelings that are between two people who are in a fight. The brothers, lo yachlu darbel shalom, They didn't talk it out. The brothers didn't go to Yosef and say, you know, Yosef, it's not really fair. Dad loves you more than me. Reuven's the Bechor. I should be the Bechor. I'm entitled to best treatment. I'm the oldest. They didn't approach him and talk out their feelings with each other. Lo yachlu dabar shalom. He explains they couldn't. Why? Because if they would, then he is an interesting pshat here. They'd go ahead and they'd speak it out with Yosef. Yosef would tell Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu would be bothered by that. And they didn't want to go ahead and be mitzayir their father. It's a funny pshat because instead they went ahead and took Yosef's coat and dipped it in blood and brought it back to the father and said, Yosef's, Yosef was eaten by an animal, Yaakov concludes. But, you know, here they didn't want to cause him tzar, according to Rav Yonah Shani. So they couldn't talk to Yosef about it. And so it got to the point, the shalom got so bad, the shalom went away. It just got so bad that the anger built up, the hatred built up, the jealousy built up by the brothers, and they went ahead and acted in such a crazy way that they mamish sold their own brother into slavery down to Mitzrayim. They didn't even know what happened to him, really, but he disappeared. They were ready to kill him, except for Reuven. So it's an amazing vart from Rabbi Yonah and Eibshitz. Le'yach l'dabla shalom, a person should always try to speak something out. You have to think about how to do it, what to say, who the person is, how to approach it, but you should never just let something sit in a harbor inside because it builds up. Those feelings build up, and then you can lash out at them, embarrass them publicly. It could become much worse if you go ahead and let those feelings just build up like we see with the brothers in Yosef. Swords number 13 and 14, just an interesting shot. I'm not going to go into it right now just because we don't have so much time. But you see later on in Parshas Vayechi, the Rabbeinu Bachai points out that this whole episode with Yosef and the brothers, Yosef never actually forgave the brothers in the pshat. Pesukim never say that Yosef went ahead and forgave his brothers for it. And it could be, and the Meshech Chachma has a very long piece on this idea, I think, as well. He says it could be that because Yosef never gave the Mechila, the Asara Harugei Malchios were actually a takana, they were misakin, they were a tikkun for the brothers, for Yosef and the brothers. The Asar HaGemalchus, the 10 martyrs of Klal Yisrael, represented the Shvatim, I guess minus Binyamin, who went ahead and sold Yosef down the river and did this terrible act. So because Yosef never forgave them, later on in the future, says Rabbeinu Bachai, who never forgiven, he says that very fascinating idea, kind of connecting Jewish history, you know, together. But it's interesting diuk that he has, that the Yosef never forgives the brothers in the Psukim Beferish. So if you look in source number 15, we'll say a couple different shatim on this pasuk number Gimel. What is Ben Zakunim? So Rashi says, he loved him because he was Ben Zakunim. So we have to understand, what is Ben Zakunim? What does it mean he loved him? It's the reason he loved him. So what's the reason? Ben Zakunim, what does that mean exactly? Rashi says, Shano lo leisik naso, because Yosef was born when Yaakov was very old. Unkelus translates to, it means that he was very wise. And so Yaakov Avinu taught Yosef all the soides, all the secrets that he learned in Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever down to Yosef. Davar Acher, Rashi says, Shehaya Zin Ziv Ikonin Shelo Domelo. Says that they looked, they had similar facial features, they looked alike, so Yaakov Avinu loved them. Three different pshatim in Rashi. Well, let's see a couple of other pshatim and what it means exactly. So source number 17, really the Baal Turim goes ahead and says, Ben Zakunim, Begematria, Zakunim is Raz. Raz means the secrets. Shemasa lo Razei Torah. Just a nice Baal Turim there. He taught him the secrets of Torah. The Baal Turim also says the word Zakunim is an acronym for Zroim, Kachim, Nashim, Yeshuos, Moid. And Yeshuos is really the Gemara in Nezikin. It's interesting, it leaves out Taros, but it's an acronym for almost all of Shisha Sidre Mishnah that Yaakovino passed down and taught Yosef HaTzadik. Source number 18, the Rashbam, he says Binyamin was really the Ben Zakunim. Binyamin was born even after Yosef. Yaakov Avinu was even older. So if it's Rashi's pshat that it's because he was born at such an old age to Yaakov Avinu, that's why he loved him so much. What about Binyamin? Says the Rashbam, the harbe kodem shenola Binyamin hayelo ben zekunim hischil avo. So he says that really, there was a big break. He was the last of the first 11 sons. Then there was a big break and Binyamin came. So it was he was already the son of old age, and the love started happening when Yosef was born, because he was the last of the 11, and then there was a big break and Binyamin came. But the Chizkuni gives a different shot on why it wasn't Binyamin. He says, Hare Binyamin ben Zikunim, Ela ein avas Binyamin kshura belibo shel Yaakov kavaso shel Yosef. Why? Lefi kishe yaldaso imo mesa. Because what happened when Binyamin was born? Rachel Imenu died. And that really hurt Yaakov Avinu. Of course he loved Binyamin, but he loved Yosef even more. Nothing bad happened when Yosef was born. When Binyamin was born, his favorite wife, person he loved the most, Rachel Imenu, person he loved the most in the world, his partner in life, was Nefteris. So that even though Binyamin was born later at an older age for Yaakov, and he was the greater Ben Zikunim in age, Yosef had the Ava, had the love of Yaakov Avinu. That's the Chizkuni. We'll skip the Malbim for now. I just want to go ahead, and you should definitely look at sources 21, 22. They're beautiful ideas, really talking about the way Bechira works in the world, Arachayim HaKadosh, and it's an amazing Arachayim in terms of what his whole Cheshbon was, what Reuven's Cheshbon was in Vayetzileim Yadam, of saving Yosef from the pit. But if you look in source number 23, I just want to, for the last few minutes, talk about the Maisa with Eishes Potiphar. Eishes Potiphar goes ahead and tries to seduce Yosef HaTzadik, and he's misgaber. He overcomes. And if you look in the Pesukim, it's not just once, it's not just twice, it's mamish every day. She's trying a different tactic. And you look in Pasuk Ches, in Perek Lamed Tes, source 23, Vayimoyin, which has a shalshelas, and so he went ahead and he refused. He wouldn't do it. He says, I can't do it. I can't do it. And he stops. He doesn't give in. He refuses. And we know he ends up in jail because of it. So in sources number 24 and 25, the Ramban tells us that as much as he wanted to do what she wanted him to do, he was more of a Yari Hashem than following Ratzon Hashem than following the Ratzon of Eishes Potiphar. He was Yari Hashem Yoiser, Vizet Tam, and that's the reason that he was Misgaber. The Ksava HaKabbalah also has an amazing shot, and he says, he goes ahead and develops this idea about how when you're dealing with the Yetzirah, when Yosef was dealing with this Taiva, and imagine it, you're in prison, and then you get out of, you know, you're in a pit, then you're a prisoner, then you finally rise to the top. You haven't been with a woman and had a relationship with a woman in so many years, and this woman's coming to you and she's seducing you over and over and over and over, and you, how are you misgaber? How did he do it? So you have to have this attitude of vayimain, and that's you know, he explains. But if we look, and here's a question for Jeff Thurm, don't look at number 26 yet. How many shalsheluses do we have in the Torah? You could look at 26 if you don't know. How many are there? Four. Four times we find Shalshalas in the Torah. Source number 26, you see in Parshas Chayisar, Parshas Vayera, Parshas Vayeshev, and Parshas Tzav. And the words are Vayomar, Vayismama, Vayimayin, Vayishchat. And I heard from Rav Olbaum, Shlita, in Queens, a beautiful Vart, connecting all these Shalshalases. He said as follows. He said, if you look into Kedushas Levi, so Kedushas Levi tells us, Yevuar Shalshalas Soid Hais Kashris. That a shalsheles is the side of connection, of connecting. We know it's really like it's three connections, right? Ki Yosef mispar kata gematria shem eya. Yosef mispar kata gematria, which means if you take off the zeros at the end, is the same as shem Hashem. He says at the bottom, v'zeu shalsheles shahaya mekasher atzma shem ekya. That Yosef atzadik connected himself to shem Hashem. That's the Vayimayin. Asher bo kol shemos Hashem yisbarach, and Ekya has all shemos Hashem. So what does this have to do with anything? What's the pshat? So Rav Olbaum said beautifully, and I think this is his own because he didn't quote it from anyone else. An amazing chiddush. The four Shalsheleses are teaching us a huge lesson in how Yosef HaTzadik was Miskaber in the Yetzirah and how we can be Miskaber in the Yetzirah in life as well. What are they? Vayomar. If you go ahead and you talk to the Yetzirah, meaning you start negotiating a little bit, you start rationalizing, then Vayismama. You're just delaying it. But it's going to happen. You're going to lose. You're going to give in. Yetzirah, once you start a conversation with him, you start thinking about it more, whether it's literally speaking or thinking in your head that you want its taiva, it's not so bad. I do other averos, okay. You know, once you start vayomar, the conversation, then it's just delayed and you're it's very likely you're going to be nechshel. How is Yosef misgaber? Vayimayin. He didn't go ahead and start a conversation. It wasn't even a possibility. He prevented it completely. Then what happens? Vayishchat. What do you do to the Yetzirah? You mamish, you slice them up. You cut them up, you shecht them. Get rid of the Yetzirah. That was Yosef's way of being miskaber. He was a vayimayin. He went ahead and prevented himself completely. He didn't just delay. He wasn't considering. It wasn't an option. It wasn't a choice. It wasn't something that was on his mind. Mamish, I'm not doing this. And that's a lesson I think we can learn how to deal with the Yetzirah. Yetzirah pops in our head. Let's do this avera, do that avera. It's not such a bad avera. You know, you did this yesterday. You can do it again today. You can't start negotiating. You can't start discussing it. Once you start, vayismama, then it's gonna happen. You're gonna lose. You're gonna be nechshel. But if you're vayimayin, then vayishcha. You go ahead and you beat the Yetzirah, you miskaber the Yetzirah, just like Yosef HaTzadik was. Shkoyach and everyone coming. And everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.